So, Doug, that's a message that we are sending to you as the portfolio committee. When we come into an institution, we want to relax and take the whole morning until lunch, you know. We don't want to rush around because, as I said earlier, the institution would be like our second home. We feel related to you in one way or the other because you are related to the Department of Arts and Culture, a department that we are overseeing according to the Constitution. So we are really excited to be here, but we have to call you to say we are running late because we were busy on the other side in that other institution, and the issues that we were discussing, we felt that we must not leave as they are. We need to discuss, but we feel that we have to go back there. And I have a sense that even here, we will want to come back because we have very limited time. As you all know that we are the portfolio committee, but what we will do, we will do introductions first so that we know who is here, we know who and doing what, where, and thereafter we'll take it from there. We'll start here with the portfolio committee. Let's start here and then we'll go down the line.
Oh, I'm Asanda Machobeni, the member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Shawuma Shangu, member of the committee.
I'm Oliswa Tom, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture.
Kansani Nanguru, member of the committee.
The chair of the council.
In the Hale, I'm the CFO. Roxana Umar, Chief Executive Officer, City Community of South Africa. Sakio Kisno
from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Thank you very much. I will not waste time, as I did in the first institution, of having long introductions, because that's what I did. And at the end of it, I've wasted a lot of time. But just to say that as the portfolio committee, you know that our mandate constitutionally is to do oversight over institutions that receive money from government. We are new from the box, the portfolio committee of the fifth term of arts and culture. So we would like to know what you're doing, and we want to know how you're doing it, and we want to know who's benefiting from it. So as I usually say, that everything that we discuss, we need to be open and frank in our discussion, because it's for the interest of the people, it's not for our own interest. So we are, as the chairperson and as the committee, we encourage people to be open and frank, and because we want to work together to ensure that we deliver on the mandate that we are given. So I will not waste time, and I will give you the opportunity to do it.
Thank you very much. I'd like to, my chair may want to say something before.
Honourable Member Chair, thank you very much indeed for visiting your institution indeed. This is your institution, and on behalf of the Council and the management of the institution, indeed the department, we take this opportunity to say that enjoy yourself, be with us. We will take you through the process and what is EZCO. what is to be expected, what is our mandate, how are we executing that particular mandate, how are we meeting the objectives of the department and government as a whole. But finally, I must say that it is also very important and imperative for you to appreciate, and I agree with your observation, Chair, that to spend 1 hour or 2 hours in an institution that has 11 national sites, an institution that carries the embodiment of the history. When you say the existence of slavery in South Africa, you're actually sitting at a place where you should appreciate and spend time to understand what is happening. When you say that there's a seat of parliamentary politics in this country, you have to appreciate through the National Library the reservoir of information that is there to inform ourselves. When you say you are dealing with the institution that has looked through series of government processes, that information is sitting here. I'm also happy to say to you, as you are here today, we will actually want you to visit one of the important corner into this particular site, which has the human remains of those who are before us, and the significance and importance to understand the role of culture in the global running of the state. It is also important that as you visit this place, you should also appreciate that amongst those human remains, there are human remains from the rest of the continent and part of the world, that we are in a process of engagement to repatriate those remains to their respective countries and repatriate back South African remains in those respective countries. It's a process and it's a program that we would urge Parliament to appraise themselves and understand and be party to that particular scenario. But I must also say, Chair, that we would urge members of the committee, not only today, from time to time, take time to visit the 11 site. We'll never do the 11 site today. From time to time, visit the 11 site, spend time so that the team takes you through, so that you appreciate what is the importance of each and every institution. Finally, I must say, you would be aware that Iziko Museums of South Africa was a culmination of a project which we call the flagship, National Flagship Project. There are two of those flagships in South Africa, where amalgamating different museums, standalone museum, into one composite structure. There's only two. One is the Northern Flagship, which is based out of Pretoria, it's called its own, and the Southern Flagship, which is based out of the Western Cape, which is Iziko. So it is a combination of different museums and centers and institutions into a body called Museums, Iziko Museums of South Africa. In this regard, it is my pleasure to ask the CEO to make the presentation and take you through. We will take questions, clarity, and further extend the invitation for members to visit Iziko. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just to brief the committee and what we're dealing with is the purpose of your visit, an introduction to Iziko Museum, our Iziko guiding documents, legislative and other mandates, our leadership and governance, vision, mandate and strategic objectives, the scope of Iziko Museum's collections and impact, which our chair has already done, talk to you a little bit about our sustainability, our partnerships, challenges and achievements as well. Like you said, the purpose is to assess our program performance of the Iziko Museums of South Africa. My chair has already told you that we are a Southern flagship institution, but I just want to sort of just go on to what is a Southern flagship. The flagship, the expectation of a flagship is supposed to be an institution that is meant to give support to other institutions as well. It is meant to be there to interact with other museum institutions. That's what, when it was in fact conceived, that is the purpose. And it was also meant to be able to provide training and exchange of objects, provide some exhibitions that would travel through the country, etc. Because they are smaller museums as well. So that is what the purpose was. And it was formed in 1999 when there were five clusters of established museums in Cape Town were merged. And the amalgamation process was given credence by the Cultural Institutions Act. And we receive 80% of our annual budget as a subsidy from the Department of Arts and Culture. We as Iziko try to raise 20% of our own funding as well to support the budget that we the subsidy that we receive from the Department of Arts and Culture. We operate 11 national museums, a planetarium, a social history center, and three subject-specific libraries, and the SAS Somerset, which is a ship. We are the oldest museum, we would like to say, in Africa, but in Southern Africa, the oldest museum, the first museums that were established in Southern Africa. And at some point, we think even in the Southern Hemisphere. And these museums contain about 2.2 million artifacts. Our guiding documents are the National Treasury's Framework and Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan, the King Code on Good Governance, the Department of Arts and Culture Strategy, including Mzansi's Golden Economy, Service Delivery Outcomes of the Minister of Arts and Culture, the National Development Plan, and the Millennium Development Goals of the United Nations. Our legislative and other mandates are obviously the Premier is the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the Cultural Institutions Act, the National White Paper on Arts and Culture, and as you know, that is being revised right now, and we as an institution have quite an important role to play in that shaping of that white paper, which is quite critical. The Public Finances Management Act, and the Treasury Regulation. Now, I just want to talk about from a management perspective, the executives that are present here, our job is actually to not just work within the framework of the Constitution, the new legislation that's coming about, but it's our job to actually merge the business interests of the museum. So we actually have to take the land, labor, capital, resources, objects, and construct it into a narrative, but also work within the framework of government as well as respond to the business needs of our sector and try to create a profit and to drive that so that we can become more independent. But also to make sure that the public consumes what we are producing from a knowledge perspective. We try to be the African Museums of Excellence, laying the foundations for greatness, that is one of our mottos. And integrating the five clusters of museums has been a challenging process. My predecessors laid the foundations, they worked very hard at laying those foundations. And during the past decade, Iziko Museum staff have passionately worked transforming the mindsets and the practices entrenched in previously separate institutions that hold these collections. And through these efforts, we are generally recognized as leading heritage institutions in South Africa and the continent, setting benchmarks for African museums. And we have many examples of that, where our colleagues throughout South Africa come to us and ask us for all sorts of things. We provide training, assistance, exhibitions. People from Africa also are always in touch with us, and we are in touch with them. And then just to say that in 2012, we were renamed. We used to be the Iziko Museums of Cape Town, and the previous Minister of Arts and Culture in 2012, our council asked him to rename us, to reaffirm that we are national museums, so we were then called Iziko Museums of South Africa. Obviously, our operations, as I said earlier, are quite complex. We are here to drive business, financial, and use our capital and core delivery to make and to find a balance in which we are delivering to members of the public and to get them to diversify the audience who are coming through our doors. And so that's quite an interesting one. We were also, when we became the Southern Flagship, we were called, we had a little competition, and our staff decided that we should be called Iziko, which is the heart and where we share stories, so it's quite important. We feel that that is something that's quite central to what we do as the Iziko Museum. It's a place where we want to have connections, cultural interactions, etc. Our leadership and governance, our council, our chairman, has introduced himself, and we're very fortunate to have him here today. There are other members that make up our team. Mr. Temba Wakashe, Advocate Roshan Dahal, Professor Satya Stephen Perumal, David Kovadia, Mr. Richard Nichols, Ms. Bernadette Mutsian, and Mr. Andre Muke. These are some, not everybody is in this photograph. The operational team, this is the sort of executive and the senior management team, because our departments are divided up into core functions and operations, and then institutional advancement and finance actually also drives the institution. And institutional advancement is about advancing the institution, marketing the institution, marketing our resources, looking at different people that are coming through our museum and how we can then attract those communities that are not able to come into the museum. So this is our organogram. As you see, we have an executive director who oversees our core functions. And our core functions are art, social history, natural history, and education and public programs. And then we have our operations, which is the customer services, the people as you walk through the door, they met you and and then our human resources department, and our institutional advancement, and of course our financials, which are very, very important to our institution. At Iziko, we have 246 dedicated staff, 50 interns, we have postgraduate researchers, volunteers, associates, and friends organizations. We're one of the few institutions in the country that has been able to have a friends organization. Many start up, but they can't seem to keep the momentum. Our friends organization actually started in 1968, and they've been going along. And they play quite, they also do feed into playing quite an important role in helping us with balancing, particularly when we can't purchase artifacts for the collection. They buy that. Our vision, mandate, and strategic objective. Our vision is Iziko Museums of South Africa are African museums of excellence that empower and inspire all people to celebrate and respect our diverse heritage. Our mission is to manage and promote Iziko's unique combination of South African heritage, collection, site, services for the benefit of present and future generations. And as you know, our mandate is to enable growth and research to generate new knowledge, enriching and enabling education and public programs, develop and execute exhibitions, preserve and conservation of the national estate, which of course, as you say, you are mandated to do. We have four strategic areas. We actually, in our APP, it's been, we have three, but these are the four areas that we oversee, which is enhancing the museum experience, access and audience development, collections and research, development and preservation of collections as a national, lasting national resource reflecting our African heritage, corporate advancement, and sound governance and effective and efficient corporate services. We really strive to be efficient and effective in all ways. But at the heart of everything, Iziko is about igniting connections, creating museums for all South Africans. That's what we are. There is a changing landscape in museums. Previously, museums were, in the past, they were about show and tell, they were authoritative, own content and message, government funded. There was a one-way discourse between museums and its visitors. Today, we want museums and future behaviors want to be able to show multiple perspectives, museums as facilitators, museums that are publicly and privately funded as well. And the key behaviors that we would like to see our visitors engaging in being participatory, collaborative and interactive, and create and interpret their own experience. And they must be able to share with us their experiences as well. And so dialogue, through dialogue, the visitor is empowered to be in the museum. And it empowers us because there's a sharing of conversations. So we're moving from our museum to your museum. We want that. That's what we want to see. The scope of our museums, we have 11, like my chairman says. You would have to have at least a week to go through our museums, because the one thing that nobody has told you is when you go through museums, you suffer from museum feet. After a little while you want to sit down because it's so much of information coming at you. So you'll need about a week. But this is the South African Museum, sorry, let me just go back. The South African Museum in the Company Gardens. The South African National Gallery, you in the Slave Lodge. That's the Ezekiel at the Castle, the Groot Constantia, Workout, Koopmans de Wet on Strand Street, Rust en Frecht on Betancourt, the Old Town House, the Ezekiel Maritime Museum, the Social History Center, Bertram House. And so those are our museums. And so we would have to, I'd really love to be able to show you through those museums because they're very dynamic spaces. We're having to reimagine them, but we really find that they actually contribute to knowledge generation as well. The social history collections, and you're in one of them, in the one of the social history sites, the Slave Lodge. Ezekiel's pre-colonial archaeology. We have pre-colonial collections here. It includes some of the world's most important collections in the study of the evolution of humankind. The material provides a view of into the rich prehistory of South Africa and Southern Africa and its roots deep in time. The collections consist of stone and bone artifacts, shell, pottery, faunal material, as well as rock art paintings, which collectively span about 1.4 million to 300 years ago. The square, the power of rock art, is a prize-winning exhibition at the Ezekiel Museum, which traces the interpretation of some of the most beautiful art ever made, produced by the hunter-gatherers of Southern Africa. Ezekiel also boasts a collection of 2,000 transcribed drawings of rock art by 19th and 20th century European artists, which are another important resource for the study of Southern African rock art. We have the largest and very well-known collection of early Stone Age artifacts from fauna and famous sites such as Elandfontein, which tells us about very important Homo sapien and our Homo sapien ancestors, while finds from the coastal sites such as Klaasie's River Mouth, De Gelder, Blombos Cave, Unique, highlighting the prehistory of morphology and etymology, modern humans from about 140,000 to 60,000 years ago. This is your stuff. This belongs to us, our nation. We have the internationally renowned Blombos ochre. Ochres are soft stones which are crushed pigments, which is used at the Blombos. That's the earliest evidence anywhere in the world of aesthetic symbolism has been identified. Basically, it was the first makeup kit. It's on view, I'm just simplifying it, at the South African Museum. To see something as old as that, and that people, you know, 77,000 years ago actually thought about the way they enhanced themselves is something that's absolutely mind-boggling. The social history collections, I just want to reflect on one thing. I've told you a little bit about what we have. I want to say to you that we have the Leidenberg heads in our collection. And it is at, you've seen them.
No, I know that you took them.
They're from your province. We're protecting them. They are a heritage of our nation. They are from 500 BC. I think it's BC, if I'm not yet.
450,
yes. And they are in our care, and we're very proud of them. But they belong to our nation. They actually educate our nation. They tell us about the way people thought about the earth, how they used the earth, and how they transformed our life. Because that is the early creation from this region. And it's things that we should be showcasing and be happy about. And it's right now, it's on show at our at the castle. So, and I'm pleased that you... This is the Linton panel. It is at our South African Museum. It means nothing to you, but I may tell you, take out the pennies from your purse, and you will see that in fact the pennies in your purse, all the coinage, actually has been taken out of the Linton panels. This is where it got the Linton panels. This is on your doorstep, Portfolio Committee. It is right here, and it's in our collections, and it's something we should be even more proud about. But this is from the Linton panel in the Ezekiel collection. Another form of artwork that tells us, you know, just early man and the kind of art and the revering of our earth. Our art collections are one of the collections that constitute a very rich and impressive overview of historical and contemporary art in South Africa and internationally. And the art collections, as you will see, we actually have art for over 500 years. We haven't been collected, but it sort of tells the history for about 500 years back. The beginnings of the Ezekiel South African National Gallery collection, the earliest art and collections of a public nature in South Africa, dated back to 1871. The profile of this museum, and it's right beside you, Parliament, started in, that building was made, was built in 1930. We also have another collection, Old Town House, which is on Green Market Square. And there's a story, you must go there. That particular building is supposed to be, and somebody helped me on the staff, is supposed to be the exact center of Cape Town. Is that right? Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be the exact center of Cape Town. So you must go to that site. If you want to go to the exact center of Cape Town, Old Town House is the place. But I just want to say to you, apart from having a very dynamic exhibition program, because that's what art is about. It's about looking at our world and talking about what is happening around us, etc. We also find that our artworks are referred and are requested by the rest of the world as well. Something like 286 of our artworks were outgoing to inform exhibitions internationally as well. So we, you know, I mean, I think, yeah, our collections are quite good. The artworks are made up of African art, modern paintings, historical paintings, and there's some Sir A. Bailey Bequest, the Michaelis Collection, Contemporary Art, Print and Drawing, and Photography and New Media. So there's a whole different range of artwork in that collection. We've got something like about 11,000 pieces in our collection. I mean, photography is different, but we've got about that. So it's a fairly collection. As you can see, we have Merit Dibambe here, and she's been making lots and lots of waves throughout the world. Merit Dibambe has actually, her grandmother used to be domestic, and she decided that she wanted to tell her grandmother's story. And so what she did was she started to make this woman in this Victorian way, and she has these horses, huge horses, and she built them all herself, and then she tells the story about overcoming being a domestic. And this is one of her pieces where she says, the purple shall govern. Our natural history collection, I think a lot of it is, it's a very interesting collection. They've formed the fundamental role in scientific study, and but now we have new and there's new and pressing importance for these collections. Especially because they are playing quite a role in food security, disease control, climate change, and the negative effect of our rapidly dwindling natural resources. So scientists and academics and researchers are continuously referring to these collections for precisely that reason. Now, there is an immediate strategic imperative to secure strategies to, in fact, enhance these collections and to put policies into place to make sure that they are, these collections are sustained so that they can help us understand the future. I'm just saying that. I mean, there's no threat or anything on that stuff, but we need to, in fact, do that. And I'll show you later on how we are doing that as the Department of Arts and Culture. And so these collections are, in fact, contributing greatly to our understanding of the scientific world, but it also underpins the work of biologists, geneticists, medical researchers, public health professionals, veterinarians, environmentalists, conservationists, geologists, geographers, climatologists, environmental impact assessors. And these are just to name a few people who are in fact making reference to these collections. I want to tell you a little story. We have a little bullfrog in our collection. And when they were doing testing, not fertility drugs, they were testing the pill. They came and they were using our bullfrogs to do the testing on them. And they're in the collection. So, you know, these little collections that we have, people may say, but why do you have these bottles and bottles and bottles of snakes and bottles and bottles and bottles of fish? In fact, they play quite an important role in reference to the past and the future. So it's really, really rich, our collections there. Our zoological collections are the largest in South Africa, with a large number of specimens, depending on how we rate the first and second of these specimens. Our collections are of national significance, but for the zoological collections, our particular strengths are ants, bees, wasps. We have a very good coverage of these for the whole of Africa. We also have very rich archaeological and paleontological collections as well. And we have the largest invertebrate marine collection in South Africa. Our marine mammals and the fish are only second to the ones in Grahamstown. But we have some of the oldest invertebrate collections in Africa. So I think that, I think it looks like what I'm trying to do is I'm actually trying to tell you the value of these collections. These are the areas in which we are collecting. A lot of it is in marine biology, marine vertebrates, fish, marine mammals, whales and dolphins. We're also internationally known for our marine mammals. And we've gone into very good partnerships with a number of other institutions to, in fact, identify quite a few of our collections as well. Paleontology, rock and minerals. And then I just want to share with you, this is a scientist. He's internationally known. He's a B1 rated scientist by the National Research Foundation. He participated, he's a paleontologist, and he works here on the West Coast, and he goes all over the world, to Patagonia, to Africa, to all sorts of places, and he goes fossil hunting. And recently he was involved in three movies, Your Inner Fish, Your Inner Reptile, and Your Inner Monkey. And it hasn't been shown in South Africa though, and 20 million people have already viewed this movie. So, and Dr. Roger Smith he's world renowned, and he's always invited by different people to be on their team to go, and he's right on our doorstep, and he works for Ezekiel Media. So it's quite good. Now, Chair, you said you wanted to know what kind of impact Ezekiel is having. And I've already given you a sense of the collections and its impact. Now, our education. We have a very extensive education program. We've made significant impact in terms of engaging with young people, having activities going on, and making sure that members of the public engage with us. We talk to other government departments, we engage with them in their education programs, in their public programs. Our strength is in interacting with the public. I don't know whether you did see the young ones come when you came in, whether you saw the school young people or they were already out of sight in a lesson or two. But we have schools pouring into our museums every single day. Our programs serve our diverse public. They're meant to be empowering regardless of who you are, your class, your socioeconomic background, your gender, your disabilities, your religion, etc. We also contribute to social transformation, independent thinking. We promote a culture of human rights, inclusivity, environmental and social justice, while valuing indigenous knowledge systems and foregrounding our rich history and heritage of our country. The museum's education and public programs give expression to the knowledge, skills, values, worth, and learning in South Africa and the global context. And it's our aim to ensure that children, youth, and adults acquire and apply knowledge and skills in ways that are meaningful in their lives. Our public programs, as you can see, we had last year 60,000 young ones that came through our site. We had a number of participants, 48,000 people who participated in our commemorative day program, which is also meant to support what is happening nationally. The learners that came to the planetarium, there were 34,000 of them. Number of general public coming, 37,000. Our mobile museum, which is 10 years old, 20,000. It reached 20,000 people, and we had a number of special needs programs. We did 28 of those. We produced worksheets for learners, for teachers. You've got a pack in there, and you will see what we put in there for you. We have teacher programs. We have public programs, we have guided tours, we have holiday programs, we go on outreach programs to far-flung communities, we have internships at the museum, and we also participate, we have CAT-CETA interns as well. Research is very important at the museum. I told you about the research that our natural history, our social history, and our art people are engaged in. But just to share with you that last year, a staff member of ours with Roger Smith, they went out on a field tour, and they, in fact, made a remarkable discovery near Vicksburg. And they discovered a rare specimen, which is a mammal reptile-like specimen that they had discovered. And the staff member that made the discovery was Sibosiso Mthungata, and that's him drilling into the earth. We engaged in redress. Our chair told you that Ezekiel Museum have got human remains, and these were human remains because they were collected for racial research, and we're not very happy about that. And the state president, in fact, this is the occasion in the Northern Cape where the remains of Troy and Klaas Pienaar were returned to South Africa, and they were being reburied, and Ezekiel was centrally involved in that process. And Ezekiel has got human remains, and we treat them very, very like sacred, particularly the racially ones. We're busy working on that because we would like to repatriate them, but we are involved in that. Ezekiel also has its own policy on human remains and how to deal with human remains within the museum. But we'd also like to drive the national policy or be involved in the national policy. It's not for us to make national policy, but be involved in the national policy on human remains. That's very, very important to Ezekiel, because there are many museums in the country that have human remains. And it would be very nice for us to, in fact, share our experiences. The impact that we have, last year, we had 486,590 people that walked through our doors. So it's it's not quite 500,000, but that amount of people went through our doors. So it's quite a substantial amount of people going through our doors. And that is something that we are very proud of. We have exhibitions, a very robust exhibition program. We had 8 temporary exhibitions at the Art Museum. I was talking to you earlier on about Mary Sibande. This is a Mary Sibande object and artifact where it's being placed down by our staff members. It's being put down for an exhibition. Then we have the Department of Arts and Culture actually values our scientific, what our the contribution Iziko is making to the science of the country. And they've set aside money for a capital works expansion program at the South African Museum, and it's happening as we speak. We're going to have a new section within the South African Museum, and that is going to sort of be a little bit revolutionized museum work in the 21st century. What it's going to do is it's going to show our collections, which are normally hidden from members of the public in our storage areas, are suddenly people will be able to see those collections and see how the curators work, etc. So that's going to be quite nice. So as we are now in 2016, this project will be, hopefully it will be ready and we will be able to showcase the courtyard project. This is an artist's view of the new courtyard project. It's just a center well with, you know, reimagining our storage areas and making it more accessible to members of the public. Our sustainability. I'm not going to dwell on this too much because I think that these are probably going to be at another point where we will talk about this. But our revenue for this year is 89,120,000. Last year we had a deficit, and that's because, not because we were in the last financial year, we had a deficit of 6 million because of the post-retirement medical aid which we have. Our sources of income is a government grant, capital works, our own income generation, sponsorships and donations, and then we employ some reserves. As you will see, I told you earlier on, our government grant this year is 65,331,000, but our total income is 89 million. So we're going to have to raise the rest as well. Our expenditure, as you will see, the majority of it, and I think it's better illustrated, I beg your pardon, our expenditure, compensation of employees, as you will see, is 65 million for our staff, compensation of employees. Goods and services is 19 million, and our museum functions, we only spend 4 million on that for our core function. So that is something that if we had, if our resources were better. But our accounting, we've changed the way we've now accounting. What we've done is compensation of employees is now also put against museum functions. So that gives a better picture of how we, our museum functions. We now saying, actually, our staff are part of our museum functions. They're not separate to that. So they're integrated into that whole thing. Our income, as you can see, our own income, we're still heavily dependent on government for our grant. Our own income pales in comparison to what we get from government, and then our fundraising as well. So we're trying as an institution. But I may pause here and say, with your indulgence, Chair, that no museum in the world ever makes a profit. No museum in the world. Not even the Guggenheim or any museum in the world makes a profit unless it gets huge foundation injection from somewhere. Our expenditure, I referred to it earlier on, but this is just a graph of it. Personnel, operations, core functions, and then our liquidity ratios, but I don't think I'm going to go through that. Our revenue, our expenditure, our revenue versus our expenditure. If you look at this year, particularly 2014, you will see that there's a big possibility that we're going to be overexpended. And in 2014, we're going to be overexpended. And there's a number of reasons for that, but most importantly, it is our post-retirement medical aid that will actually push that up. Is that correct? We've sliced it up for you. This is what we have: our government grant, our sponsorship, which is 6%, our admission fees we derive is 5%, our employment of reserves is going to be 1%, our capital grant is 8% from government, interest received is 3%, and our own income is 3% as well. Again, I've gone through this with you, so I'm not going to go through these. And I just want to say, these are some of our partners. And partnerships are very, very, very important in the work that we do. And particularly, we felt that it enhances a lot of the value of our work. It helps us with getting more money, doing more exhibitions, etc. Some partnerships that I think that I'd like to just... one of our very important partners is the National Research Foundation. They are exceptionally generous with our scientific work. They give us, our scientists put in for money for projects, etc., and they support our projects. They also support we have postdocs. Can you believe it? We have postdoctoral students in our museum. Our scientists are supervising those people, and masters, etc. So we have that. We also have a connection with the Center of Excellence, with the Rockefeller Foundation, who gave us money to buy a collection. When you go downstairs, you will see we've got an exhibition called There's Something I Must Tell You, and they gave us half the money to buy that. We have a connection with the West Coast Fossil Park, with the Lotto funds us because they see value in what we do. We have and we have connection with UCT as well. We have a postgraduate program with them. Our challenges are our increasing post-retirement medical aid liability, implementation of GRAP. This is a new accounting practice that we have to adopt. All those collections I've been talking to you about, that new accounting practice says, government says, give it a monetary value. Now that is very, very difficult, because we can give the monetary value, but we don't know the monetary value, and there are people out there that may know the monetary value, so it becomes it's going to make our balance sheet look very heavy. We're going to have no cash, but there's going to be, we're going to look flush. We have an aging mobile museum. We need to upgrade our planetarium. Lots of people come through our planetarium. We don't have a very nice, a strong acquisitions budget. I think if we want to continue telling the history of our country, looking at redress, not address like I have there, redress, we actually need to have a good acquisitions budget. We have a security challenge, not us as such, but there are these people that are out there roving around, identifying important collections, and then breaking into museums. Izika has done all it can in terms of security, but still there's these cartels that are operating out there. And there's nothing you can do. You know, you can have the best security systems in place, they just come in. Conservation and digitizing of our collections is a problem. Our operating budget is, we wish we can increase it. Also, this sector actually is suffering from a lack of skilled staff. We don't have conservators, our paleontologists are retiring, new ones. You know, skilled staff in the museum sector is actually quite difficult. Also, apart from just the skilled staff, you also need people who are good administrators in this sector and understand working in the public sector as such and working with museums and objects. Institutional capacity for fundraising, we don't have that, you know, an area where we really need to sort of focus on. We also need to work on increase, I'm not saying we're not doing it, our audience development and diversification of our audiences. Develop our website as a knowledge resource and develop the thematic plan, because we've actually developed a strategy to take these museums into the 21st century. And we need to find the funding for that to in fact do that. Our achievements, and I want to leave you with this, is our achievements, because I don't want you to leave here saying, but that museum person only complained and complained and complained. I didn't complain. We actually have a very professional and committed staff. We've had unqualified audits. We have a strong schools program. We have interesting and attractive public programs. Izika has received a number of awards for our museums and our work. We have highly profile scientists. We've had 21 research publications last year. And we have generated 13 temporary exhibitions. And I may say, I don't think that there is any other museum in the public sector that did generate that kind of, of exhibitions. So I may say that we actually have achieved quite a lot as a museum, Izika Museum. But Chair, I think I've spoken enough, and thank you.
Wow, thank you very much. This is really interesting. And this concept of Izika, I think it's heartwarming. Because I think we all do know that when you talk about Izika, that's where people gather to share stories. That's where people get to know each other. That's where we talk about our pain. We talk about our joys. We talk about, it's heartwarming, really. We thank you very much. And as John Maxwell says, everything rises and falls on leadership. I think this institution is blessed with good leadership. And I'm going to give now over to the members of the portfolio committee to ask questions and to make comments. I do have one or two questions on your vacancies. You have cited that you have about three vacancies or so, what's the plan? Because when you have vacant posts, it means there's work that should not be being done, or there are people who are doing double shifts, who are actually doing work that is supposed to be done by someone else. So what's the plan? And why are these vacant? How long have these posts been vacant? And what's the plan? I think you need to know the questions, because the questions are not necessarily directed to you. Everyone from Izigo will have to come up with answers. They are not directed to you specifically. The issue of the vacant post, and we want to commend you, Chairperson, your leadership, and the fact that you've been getting this audit outcome. I mean, it's really commendable that you have. It shows the type of leadership that is here, and we want to encourage you to do more, because as I usually say, these institutions are not about any of us sitting around the table, but they are about the people that we are serving out there. So we commend you as a portfolio committee for a job well done. I'm going to give my colleagues, honorable members, an opportunity, and I want you just to note the questions so that at the end you respond to the questions. And also the issue of you working with other organizations and institutions is good, because if we are not working in an integrated fashion, if we're working on our own silos, we will have a problem. We've tried this and we experienced that it doesn't work. Working in a silo, no man is an island, not even Robin Island. So I think it's important for us to work together so that we share resources, we share ideas, you know, we share our joys, we share our disappointments. I think it's a good thing for us to work together. We really appreciate the fact that you are not putting yourself out there as an island, but you are working with other people. The drop of your visitors, the figures have dropped, as I noticed from the slide. Why do you sense that your figures are dropping? Because this is the sense that I got. I'll give over them to the members of the portfolio committee to ask questions. I'm sitting in an awkward position. Another member, do you have the efforts of some mother?
Now I think it's a first impression, but it's quite impressive. Specific and unqualified words, I think, for 7 years, maybe before that. And of course, you see a lot of unqualified investors in that. Surely, I think that one day all museums will free, meaning that maybe in some other countries that is possible. I know we're a long way from that, but I think it's an ideal for museums.
Honourable Member, are there any other questions or comments, Honourable Member? Honourable Member? Thank you. Yeah, I think as the portfolio committee, we need to create our own ISRIC, where we bring all the entities together. So that I think we need to do that. We bring all the entities together where they can share experiences and share expertise, so that we have. we will be creating this one. This is ISRIC as the portfolio committee, bringing all the entities together. So that we don't want money from you, but I think this is really important, and also the issue of your human remains. This policy, we need to have a national policy. I wonder what DAC is saying, because I think we are battling with that in provinces as well. We need to have a national policy so that we are able to base our policies on the national policy. It's a very sensitive matter. And it's a matter that has to be dealt with, because it's really sensitive when you talk about human remains. You are talking about emotions of the people. So it's very sensitive, and the sooner we have this national policy, the better.
No, from me, it's actually a comment and then a question. I'm really appreciating the presentation. Accompanied by the passion both from the chair and the CEO, and I guess the positive comments made by yourself and the other speakers, I cannot amplify them anymore. But yeah, I guess we had a very beautiful presentation, and I guess for us it would be more to really get the exposure of what your offerings are. As an entity, the chair has spoken to the question of the policy on repatriations. As all of us are aware, that many of you are telling us that you have to repatriate other people out, and there are those that must be coming back home, and so on and so on. I guess the question of the policy around that area is crucial, including expertise in that regard. And perhaps the only question I may ask with regards to your, I mean, when you made the presentation, you did, when you spoke about the security aspect, did raise the issue about the level or incidence of theft of collections across the globe. I mean, they happen everywhere. But are we having an idea as to which direction they're going? Or everyone steals? You've got South Africans stealing from Europe, you have Europeans stealing from Africa and Mali. I mean, it would just be interesting for us to know, because I know from time to time we hear that a certain item that was found on an auction in Europe, and some ambassadors had to intervene and safeguard, and I think it's happening from time to time. Who are these biggest thieves of these items? And I think as I close, what is the thinking about those lights in the case? I know that they're coming from my province. what is your view? I know that we had a beautiful book created which was looking at the history and heritage of Mpumalanga, and I think they also feature there, where there was also a confirmation, Chairperson, that we have in our country one of the oldest undisturbed rock formation dating back to 3.6 billion years. So it means actually the world was started in Mpumalanga. You actually find those deposits. No, it's true. You only find them in three places in the world. Yeah. A little bit of it in Canada and Australia, but the biggest undisturbed deposits are in Mpumalanga, Babata. When God created the heavens and the earth.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess the main thing, you know, it would be interesting because part of what we need to do, and I know that we have a responsibility, and we had a discussion in one of our meetings about protecting the artist and their creation. But I know here you're talking of very old items, but I would really want to know who are these main thieves? Where are they? Are they Europeans? Are they Asians? Are they Americans? Are they Africans? You know, that just, it may not, perhaps it's an unfair question, but it would be nice to know.
Thank you, Honorable Member. There being no more questions, I'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Okay. The first question I'd like for Denise to just address that in terms of management.
There's been a lot of talk about how large our salary budget is compared to our core functions budget, and we must understand it in the context that the Department of Arts and Culture post 94 got a lot of more museums in their fold. So we haven't had the increases in the grant that we could before, and we understand that. So we have to be creative with what we do. So whenever we give an increase to staff, it can never be more than the increase that the Department of Arts and Culture gives in terms of the MTEF, our grant. So we are very responsible because salaries are a recurring cost. But every now and then we realize we have a staff shortage with a generally recognized accounting procedure 103, RAP 103. We are now required to document, to not only accession our collections, but we also have to place a value to that. That means we need more staff. So what we've done is we've sometimes sacrificed a position in order to appoint two lower positions who can work on this GRAP 103, because we have asked for the job fund, we have asked for various people for funding, but we've not been successful. You don't easily get money for staff. You easily get money for a nice exhibition and so on, but not for staff. And what the scientists that the vacant positions that the query was about was that we had the opportunity of getting 5 postdoctorate students to work on our collections, but we had to give half the funding. So we sacrificed positions, which meant we got 5 scientists to actually work on our collections, but we had to then temporarily just sacrifice those positions. So we, in Ezika, we've really tried to be very creative in actually letting our money go further than we have, because the GRAP 103 is a compliance issue. We have to comply within a certain period. We can't get away from it, so if we are not able to get more funding, we have to be creative in how we use our money.
Thank you. Then the expenditure that was raised, a drop in visitor figures. Mm. Why are we seeing a drop in our visitor figures? I think it's we actually find that when, this is our experience as Ezika, when the weather is beautiful out there, okay, nobody wants to come to the museum. They all want to go to the mountains, and they want to go to all the outdoorsy places. So we find, so when it's windy and blistery and raining, then everybody comes in. So when we have a good summer, you'll find that we have a drop in our visitors. That's the one thing. That's the main reason. Like today, we probably, it's beautiful out there, everybody will go to Boulders and wherever, but they won't want to come to us. They'll go on the topless red bus and all that. But then, of course, we are sitting in a recession. I mean, we have to admit that. And then the other reason is Metro Rail is a partner of ours sometimes. When we have a holiday, say if it's a public holiday, we go to Metro Rail and we say, Metro Rail, give people who live in Guguletu free passage to come to Iziko Museum on that day. And if they come back with a little ticket saying Iziko, now they'll come to us for free, but they just need to have a little ticket, which we'll give them. They then get a free passage back as well, you know, so they don't have to pay. But we haven't been able to strike that relationship for a little while because they are also looking at their books as well. So it's that kind of partner. Some years we strike it good, some years we can't. So that's why you notice there is a decrease. And we've also noticed that there's been a decrease since 2010. Mm. 2010 was like there, and then we've been, you know, going down. But we in a recession, we fight the weather, we also depend on partners and their generosity. So that's Honourable Mulder wanted to know about the personnel and the core functions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable members, the reason for that is I think what we do see is a skewed figure, really, because what we're showing is the operations of core functions that Iziko is spending money on. But what is missing out of that equation is the fact that the partners that we work with, the amount of money that they actually provide towards the exhibition, it doesn't run through our books because we don't physically get the money, but those partners, they are paying for getting the collections to us, they are paying for insurance, or they are paying for installation of the exhibition. So it's not shown, and that is a minimal amount that the subsidy and Iziko contributes to all those major exhibitions. So hopefully what we will do in future, if we're able to, Treasury is actually looking at it, because previously Treasury prescribed, and they are still prescribing, that we have to show the employee benefits and salaries separate. But for this year, even based on discussions with the Auditor General, our team here in the province, that because of that skewed figure showing, that we should actually start showing the component of salaries and benefits that makes up the core function. And I think because we've done the exercise, we know that we will then show that core function spending is much more than operations, because now we're adding the salaries of those scientists and everything towards the particular program. So, yeah, to the core function. So Treasury has also been asking for that. So I think in future we'll see a different picture in terms of the division of the funding.
So yeah, I did allude to that sort of earlier on. The human remains policy. Chair, do you want to speak to that?
No, thank you very much, Chair and members. with your permission, Chair, there are some few issues I want to contextualize so that when members leave us, they will provide us with future guidance. So allow me to start first with two things which are very critical. One is that we are working on the policy of 1996, which is subject to review. So it's important that we would have to recognize that what we are dealing with post-1994, 2 years later, you have a new policy. And that's the policy that has been in existence until today. So honorable members ought to accept and acknowledge that part of our accounting has to take that part into consideration. So hence the current white paper review, which we expect that the department and the portfolio committee will pass through necessary legislative process so that we have a new policy, which among the issues that the colleagues are talking to will be included into that. The second part is that you are actually the custodians of cultural policy. Now, truth be told, because I mentioned 1996, it means that you are actually operating on an old cultural policy. So So you are not dealing with the current realms in the cultural policy of South Africa, in taking cognizance of where you want to be. And I think in your current sitting, you ought to accept that in a discourse, it is important that to protect, to preserve the heritage, the art and culture. That is one component of what we are dealing with. However, you are also a custodian of the national symbols. And that is very important because what we tend to mean on that process, we are leaving three components outside that custodianship. One, the culture does not represent the norm. Culture does not represent the tradition. Culture does not represent the customs. So I think while we are talking about art, culture and heritage, you ought to begin to accept that there are certain norms in South Africa, there are certain customs in South Africa, there are certain traditions in South Africa that ought to be taken into consideration. Because when you look at your cultural policy, when you look at the preservation of your heritage, it is very important that you begin to consider that into the policy perspective. It will be an appeal that when we engage into the laws and legislations that informs our mandate, those issues are always left outside. And I'm saying, while it is a portfolio of arts and culture, you are actually a custodian of heritage. And I'm saying that deliberately, that's so that whatever we say in most cases, we are talking about certain things that are slightly outside our core current mandate, and those mandates have to be brought into so that the financing begins to change completely. The second part I want to bring to the attention of members, and also based on the presentation, is the purpose of research. It is important what we have indicated, what the colleagues have indicated, it is important that you begin to look at ourselves as your support in terms of research into this particular field. And I'll say, there will never be any other individual or group of individuals outside the cultural and artist institutions in South Africa that would have a much better knowledge or capacity of information to inform the work of the committee other than ourselves. So I think apart from only accounting, apart from only meeting where we look at you need to begin to look at us as a reservoir, as a center where you begin to say, as South Africa, when we say this, this is actually what we mean. And I'll give an example, Honourable Member, that the issue of Iziko, if that is explained properly to the rest of South Africa, we begin to ask ourselves, is that indeed true that we are practicing that? Is that indeed true that in our action, this is how we are then dealing with this particular process? But because we are not championing this, we are not championing this important aspect of our work, which is the preservation. So if we are preserving Iziko, we also ought to champion that. Now, just to look at the value what we are talking about, just to promote and market the word Iziko, it is not included in our expenditure. And that part, we assume people know what Iziko means outside there. We assume people understand and relate to that particular process. And as I said, part of the outreach and the research has to inform the work that we are doing. And in most cases, we are losing at those levels. With regard to the issue of human remains policy, it is very important and very sad. Now, I don't want to make honorable members very sad, but I think we need to indicate to you, we have decommissioned another exhibition. Because Iziko as an institution had a direct role in that, in the persons who was in charge of the Iziko. But the researchers and the collectors are of the view that whatever was collected has actual human tissues. Now, this has to be decommissioned looking at different imperatives. So we do have a history that we would want to share with yourselves, but it is actually, it brings a challenge to say, how do you take that type of a history outside? What do I mean is that the one of the previous directors of the museum, part of also his work was to do collection and preservation. In whatever mind that he had at that time, he was actually doing collection of the Sand people, and we believe that part of what was collected inside the museum, there's human tissues. Now, when we talk about the repatriation, reburial, we mean that type of a process, to say we do know where this was collected, we do know the implication, and there has to be a process how best to then deal with that type of a situation. So when we say it is a policy, the policy, for instance, that the act that governs or gives guidance to the museum makes reference to objects of museums. Now, objects of museums means even human beings and human remains are regarded as objects. Now, you can't not deal with that, because the act that I'm referring, this is why I started at 1996, that act of 1996 has left that part a reference to human beings as objects. Now, there's a debate in the field of human remains where we talk about remains or we talk about dead persons. Because when you also begin to say a remain, you are not acknowledging a particular person in that. However, we are saying to yourselves, the record says in here we do have human remains in the form of bones. Now, if you recognize that it's a bone, you cannot say that is a remain. It's a human being. How was it collected? How was it dealt with? It's a different issue altogether. So the policy had to deal with those issues. So that's why we are saying that it is important that the issue of a policy on human remains, it has been dealt with. It has been looked at slightly different. Yes, indeed, the Department of Art and Culture is working on the issue. There are a number of interpretations, there are a number of discussions, there are a number of complications in how we deal with this particular aspect. So, indeed, honourable members, we would appreciate that at the right platform you should lead and you should champion the issue of human remain policy. And I think it is important that we look at it within that particular context. Yes, indeed, as Izigo, in number of collections that are taking place in the country, this institution has played the role and has assisted with the expert advices and people that are here to assist in terms of repatriating the bodies that has come back to South Africa. So yes, indeed, this institution plays that particular role. It is important. I must also indicate that I thought Roxana was going to indicate the implications of what we are dealing with. And I'm going to sample this on partnerships and to show the skewness of how we operate. So this management is going to leave so that I brief members of, you don't leave at the place, but I'll take responsibility of what I say to honorable members. Honorable members, we are going to into a partnership with West University and the Metropolitan Museum in the New York on the issue of the rock art and rock exhibition. Now, what is the target? We know that the Metropolitan Museum is visited annually by 40 million people. We know that. But that's not our target. Our target is that we know these 40 million people, when they see this South African rock art, is going to necessitate a different interest. And the different interest is to take the same exhibition in China, which the same place is going to be visited by 350 million people. Now, we are showcasing the importance of this. Now, just to quantify this, to give a value to this, if there is an actuary who can give us that, thank you very much. If you can find him, we'll be very happy to get that particular person. But there's no way that particular individual exists in this particular country currently to quantify this particular process. Now, this is the strategicness of the partnerships, because until we are at the stage to begin to quantify the partnership, the impact of the partnership. When we say to you that the rock that you see there, it is actually in the money that South Africans are having, and that particular ornament and object is actually within your doorstep, we're not just throwing it. I'm inviting yourself to go actually see it, and I'm actually inviting you to go and make a comparison so that we can know that we are not trying to impress honorable members, but want to give you a factually correct, so that when you say that what the money, the mark that you see on your money, in actual fact, that is life, we have it, you should actually know that that information is there, and that information is there. It is not only the information. There's number of information that we believe that if it is made available to the public, is made available to our policymakers, it is going to change a little bit how we perceive and how we view certain issues. There is an issue which I also want to bring to honourable members when the colleague was saying we have 1.2 million insects or bullfrog and whatever. We will be happy that when you leave this place, you go to your respective activities, but take a little bit of advice that says, when you go anywhere else in the world and you see a pond, a pool of water, you look at that particular pool of water, you see there are animals or there are flies on top of that particular water, know that water is a clean water. It might be decolored and whatever, know that is a clean water. But when you see a pool of water where there is no insects on top of it, know that it's a dirty water. The reason why I'm saying this thing is that you could only understand that imperative if you understand the study of the insects and the imperative of the insects. Now, when we say a research is being done, we're not talking a research being done. We invite you to come and see this particular insect. You must come and see what informs certain scientific, when we say these scientists are well renowned, it's precisely because their work has been done. But we don't sell ourselves too much as South Africa. We don't sell ourselves too much as Iziko. And it is therefore sometimes we take certain things for granted. So I'm saying the study of insects, it informs us a complete difference. If you go to, when they say this place, the dead person was here, what the scientists, what the DNA specialists are looking at, they're looking at the type of insect that they find there. Because they know that that type of insect will also only be found where there is a human tissue in that particular area, and you'll find it. Now, the study of insects is very important. It's informing ourselves how do we move on some of these issues. What is also important, and the program that Roxana is talking about, which we are internationalizing our programs. There's a number of activities that we're doing with the rest of the world. However, it is important that honorable members should know that we are members of United Nations, we are members of the Commonwealth, we are members of AU. We have to showcase and contribute in a global space. And our contribution at that level tells us that how then do we begin to internationalize this process. We are saying to you, you have a movie that over 20 million people have seen it, and South Africans have not seen it, and that talks about South Africa. Nothing is in that particular movie. Nothing is central in that movie. It's not talking about South Africa. It is talking about South Africa. It is talking about your own institution. So until the stage that we become proud of ourselves, and what do I mean? If we don't have money to do new acquisition, someone else is going to finance us, someone else is going to give us money, but there is a bait. Instead of showing that to South Africans first, they will show it somewhere else first. Now you cannot say no because it's not your money. So when we say museums are not funded, when we say there is a shortage of resources, when we say we are requiring additional money, we are not requiring additional money because we think it is nice for people to see, but it's you are preserving, you are protecting your own. That is important in terms of partnerships, important in internationalization. But the piece of information we are giving to yourselves, we say South African cannot see that information first. Because whoever who gives us the money, whoever who contributes, will be the one who will dictate the terms. And that's unfortunately, when you don't have your money, it is important that you know that whoever gives you money is going to dictate the terms. Honourable Member, I would say that I think with the issue of Lydenburg and Mpumalanga, Izigo should say we ought to formalize a partnership with the province. I think it will just be a misnomer that part of our records and part of our yearbook and accounting book does not take cognizance of that. Indeed, a Barberton Rock Formation is a well-renowned. It's not just about us saying it. It is a well-renowned, and this institution has a direct relationship. I think it is proper that CEO and we do go back to the province and formalize the relationship. It is important. It is important that we enhance our partnership with the province in this regard, and I think that we will take cognizance of your observation. Finally, now we are informed by the council with the activities of what I call management activities, but I want to assure honourable members why this issue of personnel and core business it is a problem, and I'm going to make a sample assessment. No museum can open without security. No museum. Now, the day you take security not as a core business, you are basically saying you are closing the museum. And when you close the museum, so you don't have a museum. So to open a museum, and I'm talking about the one that do access control, the entirety of the security, if you take that as a support service, there's a misnomer, there's a misjudgment in terms of what are we actually saying. And that is where these skew numbers continuously bother us at the council to say we need to correct this issue. And I'm saying someone else might not look at it that way, but we are saying to you, for each and every museum to open and for the objects that are inside museum, for you to have to be proud that we have those museums, you must have security. Now, part of the discussion with the finance team, with the treasury, is to begin to tie this process so that you don't say there is a support function. It's actually a very small component of the entirety of the museum. So that's a portion that we think it must be addressed. We hope so. If we would have to account separately, we can show you a completely different picture. We can show you to say most of what we're saying to the CEO, that the danger of what you say to the council is that you don't have enough resources, but you are achieving more. And that's a danger, because a treasurer and anyone who's listening to you says, no, continue with what we are doing. We need to change that narrative a little bit. It's not doing, the allocation is actually misplaced. We need to rearrange our allocation so that we can show you exactly why we say there is a need for resources, there is a need for additional funding. And we implore on the council members to say that as and when we come to you and you are requesting an additional increase through the department, don't say these fellows are wasteful. But I must say that we thank you in terms of the observation that we are trying to manage a clean ship, and we are trying to manage the resources as we have budgeted, we voted for them. And we'll continue to do the same. We will do our best. We will produce another unqualified audit this particular year when we come to present the annual report to the department and to account properly through the normal channel. You will also see that even in this year we have produced an unqualified audit. Thank you very much.
Wow. Thank you very much, Chairman. And we were hoping that the DG would be here, but we do have the representative of the department, because I think what you have been saying is directed to the department. Tina, I'm just oversight people, we don't have money, we have nothing. I think the department will take into cognizance what you are saying, and as we said earlier, that we are hoping that we will have this session where we have all the entities so that we share best practices, we share ideas, and I think people can learn a lot from each other. I think that that's very important, and it will provide an opportunity for people to just pause a while and reflect and see where they have not done well and see where they can improve. I think it's very important, as I think most people can learn from the way you are operating. A lot of those institutions that are working with the department can learn a lot from you, and with the policy as well. I think the department has taken note, and I think this is something that we need to drive with essence the policies, because I believe that as we are now entering the fifth term of government, that pause, a wide space, is needed for us to just pause, look back and see the gaps, policy gaps that are there, the weaknesses, the strengths and that stuff. I think it's important for all of us to pause and do that. But we once again want to appreciate, as I said earlier, that you know, leadership is very important. It is very important in anything that we do to have leaders like you, Chotis. And we really appreciate the manner in which you and your council are doing your work, and the leadership, the management, leadership in the management, it's very important to have leaders. As I said, when we were in at SARA, that to be a leader is to be the head. Actually the head, this thing that's your head, that has eyes, that see, that have insight. You look at things that other people don't see. And you use a nose where you smell a red. You think, hey, I smell a red here. There's something that's not going on well here. That's being a leader. To be able to identify things that other people don't identify. To be able to listen with the ear to those things that other people don't talk about. Listen to the unspoken, because what we talk about are those things that are nice to talk about. What we don't talk about is are those things, you know, that are really depressing. So as a leader, you listen to those things that people are not saying. I think we can learn a lot, even us, from this organization. And we want to thank you very much. If there is something that the honorable members would like to say, it's an opportunity to close the word. Are you okay, honorable members? So the honorable members are saying that I've said what they wanted to say in appreciation of the work that you are doing.
Except that the chairperson says our swimming pool, once there is nothing in our life, they are dead. Our swimming pool is
we're going to engage the chairperson. But we would like to thank you very much for really appreciating the work that you're doing. And as I always say, it has a lot to do with the people that we are serving. Thank you very much.
Chair, sorry, thank you. At the lunch itself.
Oh, thank you for that. We had even brought our water because we thought that, hey, they may say that's costly. Austerity measure, that's the word.
No,
thank you so much. We are invited to lunch. Honorable member.
You asked me about who are these people that are.
Yes. I don't know whether it was appropriate to answer the question,
No.
Exactly.